Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Well, a great moment, as you can see, if you're watching on the Twitch or YouTube, Bulldog still basking in the glow of getting that PFF answer right. Playing it off as...
Oh, yeah, well...
Oh, what a guess.
It's a tremendous moment for me. Because I know, you know, what I didn't tell you is I have all those stats memorized. I looked at those grades every week, and I knew the answer was Jackson Hawes.
I should. There's so much information. I don't know. So I wonder how much Sal uses PFF. There's so much information, like charts on... I think... You know, defensive personnel usage, right? Zone, man, cover six, all the different combinations, how they line up on defense, something that's often lost on me just watching the game. I mean, I can get snap shares at Pro Football Reference, but route percentages and, you know, their grades, which are a little bit controversial. Sal, I threw a question at Bulldog and he got it right. Jackson Hawes, through 2 weeks, is PFF's highest graded tight end. How about that?
Just highest graded overall, like
yes.
Everything considered?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's weird. But,
okay. No. Well, I mean, it's largely run blocking, in which
yep.
he's second to Knox, by the way, in the league
sure.
through 2 weeks. And so they're 1-2. And he's had a couple – he's caught all his targets. You know, he had the great catch
yep.
against the Ravens
yep.
there by the goal line. That's, you know, kind of the extent of it, but still.
I mean, it's like a small sample size, right? And
mm-hmm.
those catches are going to matter and factor in. Obviously, I don't think, and even PFF wouldn't tell you this, that they're saying he's the best tight end in the league. They're taking into account everything he's done so far, and obviously he has a couple big catches, and he's been a very good blocker. The Bills don't care about any of that. What they care about is he doing the job of what they drafted him? And so far, he is. I mean, he has been really good at the point of attack blocking. They've been able to use 13 personnel, lean into that. And then that's allowed them to be able to kind of open up the offense down the field because teams aren't expecting it with three tight ends necessarily. That's actually the matchup kind of situation the Bills have dreamed of over the last few years. We talked a lot about Ken Dorsey wanting to use 12 personnel. He can allow you to do that. And then you go to Joe Brady, same thing. This is really what the Bills have envisioned. They've envisioned having tight ends on the field who teams have to kind of figure out and say, how do we match up here? Well, you know, if you're going to put that on there, we'll go heavy. Well, now you go down the field with a guy or you throw it out to him in the flat, and that could be Jackson Hawes or Dawson Knox or Dalton Kincaid. So I think so far so good through 2 weeks for the Bills.
Yeah, and Kincaid is maybe the key to that, at least as far as nothing against the other guys. But, like, if I'm looking for a mismatch, Kincaid is, if you're going heavy, Kincaid is the guy that should be able to exploit that the most, I would think. He's the most athletic of the three guys.
100%. And he's the guy, I think what the Bills have done, I actually look at their tight end room very similarly to the way I look at their running back room. They have kind of a guy that does something really well, and that would be, I would compare like Dalton Kincaid and James Cook here, which is that's your guy you're going to throw it to, skill player down the field, catching the ball athletically, can be a mismatch, and obviously we know the big playability of James Cook. Then you have a guy on the other extreme, which is he's there to be the power guy, right? That's Ray Davis. That is, you know, basically Jackson Hawes here who can help you in that regard. And then you have somebody in between, which is Ty Johnson, which is Dawson Knox, does a little bit of everything for you, right? I mean, you can put him on the field in any situation and you're okay.
At the risk of just being too confident here, It just feels like so far it's the kind of team that will figure out that it can do whatever it wants. You know, Allen being so multidimensional, you know, so capable at pivoting to whatever, and, you know, picking up on what he's seeing so quickly, as people are talking more about that than ever, I think, his ability to read defenses and get the ball to the right people. Just like, what stops this team? I mean, you could always have injuries and bounces and that kind of thing, but we've been over the schedule all summer and how playable it is for them. I mean, what are you supposed to do if you're the Dolphins? And that's, by the way, a team that hasn't known what to do against him yet.
It's a great question. And to your point about Josh Allen and seeing things, it is something he actually talked about back in, I don't remember when it was, but he said one of the things he wanted to do to get better from last year was pre-snap reads. I mean, he works on something specifically every year, it seems like. And this was the thing that he worked on this year. And it seems like it's really going well so far, which is he's recognizing, and not that he was bad at that, but, you know, he wants to get even better at it. So he's been doing great there. What is a team supposed to do? I'm not really sure. The Ravens obviously had a plan that worked, whatever that was, for, you know, 3+ quarters. And then it didn't work for a couple of drives and the Bills got back in the game. And that was obviously offensively they had a plan that worked. And I think that's where you have to kind of probably focus if you're another team. What can they do offensively, the Dolphins in this case, to move the ball in the Bills and score and keep Josh Allen off the field? Because if you can do that, like the Ravens did, then and maybe get a couple stops here or there, maybe a bounce goes your way, you get a punt, then maybe you have a chance to win. If you can't do that on your own offensive side, then I think eventually it's going to catch up with you because the Bills will find a way to score.
And you can see, you can appreciate how relative this is. I mean, Baltimore's level of success was what? Through three quarters, they'd given up only 25 points. Like that's still a pretty good pace.
Right. I mean, that's a great point.
Five scoring drives out of eight through three quarters in that game.
Right.
So anyway,
I mean, for the second and third drives of the Bills, I think they punted.
That's right.
And then they still were able to manufacture points. And then you go to the Jets, and it's like, I mean, if I told anybody before the Bills played the Jets that Josh Allen would throw for what did he have, 150, something like that,
140,
right?
Something, yeah, right.
Yeah, if he would not throw for a touchdown, he would not run for a touchdown. I mean, what person wouldn't go, oh my God, the Jets actually have a chance, maybe they're going to win this game. And yet here are the Bills scoring 30 points and blowing them out of the building.
This is also a continuation of last year, not just for them, Sal, but for the league generally as a whole. I don't know what all the trends look like, but I heard them talking this morning about this, like the pass rate over expected and how some of the top teams in the league rank very low through 2 weeks, Buffalo included, Green Bay, Detroit, Baltimore. They're just, it's at that moment now in this league. And we've been through the years together at different, you know, places on the curve. Not that long ago, it was throw, throw, throw. And now you have these quarterbacks that are so athletic and almost unstoppable. Well, you know, what have the Bills decided to do as a franchise the last couple of years? Just lean into their physicality, right? And let Allen take care of the rest. And, you know, it's been a winning recipe, to say the least.
For sure. And, you know, when I think about what you said, you know, what's going to stop them, look at the schedule. I mean, everything's in front of them, right? At this point, of course, the betting odds reflect this, but they have to get the one seed, I think, now. Like, this is, you're only 2 weeks in, and they have such a look at it. Now, of course, right? I mean, it's a long season. Anything can happen, and we're not taking into account injuries here. But, I mean, they have as good of a look at it right now as they've had at any moment, maybe other than a week late in the season, I think, a few years ago. They were number one, and I think it was the year the DeMar Hamlin stuff. I think that they had the number one seed, I think, after the Chiefs played the Bengals that year, if I remember right, a little bit before that, right? But the point is here, you look at the standings, you look at the schedule, and it's like, you got to do this now. This is it. It's set up for you. It's right in line. And now to that point, because of that, like, I think they could kind of go into every game, guys, and think, look, keep your quarterback healthy. You don't have to go out there and make a lot of really high-risk types of moves and plays. Yeah, we're going to have games where Josh Allen throws for 300 yards. But really, I mean, what you need to do is to play this out through the year to make sure that you ride into the playoffs and have him healthy and that you still win these games. And I think they can do that without playing a high variance type of football, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm really curious about that, Sal, because where is the trap in that? The trap is if you play a game that is, I don't know how I want to say this, designed to keep it close, right? You're mm-hmm. not, yeah. you're not going as hard as maybe you could. Then, you know, one thing happens, a bad call, a bad break, right? The ball bounces, it tips off some, like what happened to Mahomes and Kelce on Sunday, yep. right? You should have been in front. Oh, sorry. You know, your guy didn't catch it and their guy did. And now you lose. It opens the door for that. Like, I almost wonder if you don't try to put the hammer down, especially like at home against a team like this that Allen has had so much success on, and then hopefully sit him down for the final 20 minutes of the game or something, right?
Like last year in week two.
Right, just get the lead, you know.
Yep.
It's 30 to 10 midway through the third quarter. And you're like, okay, you know, where are the orange slices?
I agree. And I'm not saying – I'm not trying to paint the picture of the Bills are going to go into games and go, just keep the game close, no, we're okay.
I know.
You know, they're not going to try. And that, I know you're not saying that too, and I don't want people to get that impression. What I do think, though, is what's the priority for the Buffalo Bills? Okay, yes, you want to win every game. That's right, no doubt, when you go into every game. The priority for the Buffalo Bills is, number one, keeping Josh Allen healthy all year because that's your ticket to get to where you want to go to. And the way to do that is to minimize risk a little bit. And if you don't have to minimize risk, then don't do it. But there's going to be times where you're going to have to. And there's going to be – you're going to play the game. You're going to play the game through the first half. And then as the game goes on, there's going to be times where you say, you don't have to do that. Like, keep the guy healthy, run the ball, play good defense, get some turnovers, right? I mean, like, that's the formula to keep him healthy and get into the playoffs and say, we're the one seed. You got to come to us twice. And, oh, by the way, number 17 is under center, and he's healthy, and there's no issue.
So I know we'll have probably usually on these game days when we work the pregame, we visit with you maybe more than once. So, you know, we'll have time tomorrow to, you know, construct the game plan and all that kind of stuff we do. But, you know, sitting here today, a little more than 24 hours out from kickoff, how do you feel it's best for the Bills to attack this Miami defense? Does it feel like they could do whatever they want?
Yeah, so after everything I just said, I think you go out and you – put the hammer down right away if you can against this team. I think that they're going to play a very high-risk game, Miami, because they're going to need to do something. And I think they're going to try to come after Josh Allen. They've had some success, you know, getting after the quarterback. It's the one thing they've done a few times, not every time. The playoff game here, they were able to do that, right, a few years ago. And, you know, they had the sack and the fumble and the touchdown mm-hmm. in that game, for example. But, man, their secondary is just not that great. And I think there's opportunity there. I think the Bills have an opportunity here to just basically go right after them and say, don't let them off the mat. You have a team that you do not want to give any life to here because they are fighting for their season. But what you can do is if you get after them right away, they might put their tail between their legs and say, let's get on the bus, get on the plane and go home and see if our coach is still our coach tomorrow. Right? I mean, that might just really be their mentality and how they're feeling because of their reeling right now. And how do you do that? I think it's set up for them to go right after them, attack them through the air, and take advantage of what I think is a weak secondary with Josh Allen throwing the football.
Sal Capaccio on the West Hur Hotline. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog here. Bills and Dolphins tomorrow night at Highmark Stadium. So you got the first word on injuries today. Oliver, I think probably we were not expecting to play. Maybe Milano, there was some hope yesterday at this time or before practice, but turns out neither will go.
That's right, and I guess the story here is Matt Milano and where this stands right now, because Sean McDermott said when he was on with me earlier, really what they need to do is, you know, still wait and see, wait till next week and see what happens, and really it's about how everything responds over the first several days after the injury. So there's still a question about Matt Milano's availability beyond this week. I still think it's encouraging that the fact that we haven't heard, like, the guy from Tampa hurts his pec, and we hear that night that he's out for the year, right? I remember,
right.
You know, through all the national reports. So usually something like that happens. Now, is there a chance that could be longer term? Sure. But the fact we haven't heard that, the fact that Sean even opened the door yesterday to Matt possibly practicing today, potentially was the word he used. I think that's still encouraging, but we're still here now, and he hasn't practiced, and he's not playing tomorrow. So we'll see where that goes. But he's not going to be in the lineup tomorrow. Neither is Ed Oliver. No surprise there. They still have their two top nickel corners limited and questionable for this game, Taron Johnson and Cam Lewis. But I would tell you, I mean, Taron Johnson told the media yesterday that he's feeling good, and he thinks he'll be ready to play. So I'm expecting that. He didn't play on Sunday. Cam Lewis was in a red non-contact jersey when we were out at practice yesterday. I think that's trending well, but we'll see there. So that's good. And then you have Jordan Hancock, who might have his NFL debut. We'll see. Honestly, guys, I don't even know if there's a spot for him if he's ready to play. Because is he a safety? Is he a nickel? who are you putting him in over? I mean, really, because he's played safety mostly until he got hurt. It's good. It's good to have these issues, right? It's good to say, hey, that guy could play, and he's a guy we really like, but oh, where's he actually going to play? Because everybody else is ahead of him. And oh, by the way, Shaq Thompson's also questionable, but with Matt Milano out, I'd expect Dorian Williams there, but Shaq Thompson obviously could be a part of the game plan and rotation there, and especially on base defense if they do that.
What did you think of how they used Tyrell Shavers last week?
In what regard? Just like, you know, using him as a receiver?
What was it? He was on 25, yeah. Some 25 or some number like that snaps.
Yeah.
Even early.
It wasn't
a little
just
bit
at the end of the game, right? Either. You know what I mean? Like, he was in the game early. That first drive, Josh missed him. You know, and I think Josh, you know, could have thrown a better ball that could have got to Tyrell on the sidelines there. They like Tyrell Shavers. Like, Tyrell Shavers does everything right. That's really what it is. Like, they trust him. We all know that word is very big with Sean McDermott and this coaching staff. Tyrell Shavers has been in this system, in this organization for 3 years. He is not a new player. He has been here. He has worked. He's earned everything that he's had to get, and that earns you opportunity on the football field. Right now, they don't have a guy with kind of the length of Tyrell Shavers at wide receiver. Maybe Keon Coleman, I guess you could say, but he's a different type of guy, and they trust him, and he's not going to be a guy that's going to necessarily make all these, you know, he's not going to be the number one receiver in as far as volume, as far as targets. But they like what he can do and bring and trust him on the field in all situations.
I could be mistaken about this, but I think he was on the field right at the start, if not the first play of the Baltimore game on offense, the first series. I noticed him right away on mm-hmm. Sunday night, you know, week before last. And, you know, how notable that is, it just stood out to me. Like, wow, this guy's out here to start the year. So, I mean, it speaks to what you're saying, that they believe, you know, they believe in him. Maybe that was even like, you made the team, you're active. Here, let's get you right into the fire here. Get you a taste of this.
Yeah, for sure. I'm looking right now. Snap counts that night, 20%. He was on the field for 20%. He was 17 of 85. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, but to me, I agree with you, Bulldog. I think that when you have a sixth wide receiver that makes the team, you're a close game. Do you really expect him to come out of the game at 20% of the snaps? No, but he did. In fact, he outranked Elijah Moore that game, who had 12 snaps. So, yeah, I mean, they're trusting him to be on the field in a lot of different situations.
So, Miami, we're talking a lot about just what kind of state the franchise is in. We talked to Marcel Louis-Jacques today about things, and he's not closed to the possibility that this could be it for Mike McDaniel. Maybe they have to show, you know, some fire in this game. Maybe just even keep it close. I don't know. He doesn't know what's going to happen, but it seems like a non-zero possibility that there's a coaching change there. What about the Dolphins? How far gone do you see them as? Or is it a team, like I asked Bulldog, if they won the Patriot game, which was a one-score game, they had a chance to win it, are we having a very different perception of them? Maybe not.
I don't think you're having a very different perception of them other than maybe the talk of Mike McDaniel's job security. Like, if they win that game, I don't think there's any talk of that this week. But because they did lose that game, and by the way they lost the game at the end, did you guys see the video that someone put out a video about the operation of the last drive for the Miami Dolphins? And I was just blown away of how terrible it was. And, like, for example, and I'm just going to kind of run through it real quick. Like, for example, Achane runs that play, catches the play, and he goes into the end zone, and they have to review it to see if he stepped out of bounds, which he did. And there's a video that's out there. I'll have to send it to you. And
we just talked about this, Sal.
Okay, yes. Great. So the operation was terrible from the start, right? They had all this time and they
amateur
penalties.
Hour. Yeah.
And I think this is a part of a larger problem that when you ask me, like, what I think about them, I think right now they are a disaster right now from top to bottom, the way everything is going. And I think that Mike McDaniel is probably very, very much on thin ice, not only with the organization, but with his own players, because it just seems like there is no connection right there between a guy, and by the way, who had a connection I thought was really good a couple of years ago. I just think now it might be, I don't know how this is going, even from his own locker room. So, yeah, I think it's a really bad situation. It's really dire in Miami. What I said today on the Extra Point Show was almost, to me, like, feels like it's at the worst of the worst of the drought. Like, when you just knew it didn't matter, nothing's going to go your way, and no matter what you do, it didn't matter, because everything is a fait accompli and inevitable at some point here about how they're going to make changes.
Yeah, we talked with Ross Tucker about some of this yesterday, and the danger in trying to sort of establish yourself as a different guy, like different rules, different personality, trying to, you know, tighten it up a little bit because it's been too loose, and just how hard that can be. I mean, we've heard that for years from people who've played. It's been said many times in this room by us. It's just hard. Once guys, if you change too dramatically, it's like, I don't trust this anymore. Because who are you exactly, right? I thought I knew who you were. You showed us who you were, and now you're showing us something different. And I don't know what to really believe in anymore.
Agreed. And players can see through that, and it feels like that could be happening. Did you guys listen to Rasul Douglas yesterday at all on the Bills?
I did not.
He was interviewed in the Miami locker room. And listen, he wasn't taking a shot at Miami, okay? I don't want to paint it that. I don't think he was doing that. But Rasul was always very honest here when you talked to him. He was very thoughtful, and I really appreciated that. And he was asked about the Bills, and he said, well, Josh Allen's the best. Like, why are the Bills so good? Well, he said, starts with the quarterback. He's the best quarterback in the league. And then he went on, and he said something interesting. He said, they just do things right over there. That's what he said. Like, those are his words. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, to hear a guy say that who's been in multiple organizations, who has a perspective of being in Green Bay, by the way, where they have a really good reputation organizationally. I know they haven't won as much over the last several years. And then now in Miami. And Rasul Douglas said, they just do things right over there. I just think that spoke volumes to what you're talking about right there, which is that's not a shot at his own organization, but that just takes a certain level of that respect to think about that when you are in that place. And if you go from Buffalo to Miami and you're Rasul Douglas, you know, you think about maybe that is creeping in, like, well, it's really not the same here. And what have I got here with this coach and this organization?
You're right about Green Bay, but that is like years of Rodgers, and there was plenty of dysfunction there too. So
yeah, that's right. Yep.
He would have been around for that. We've already covered it, and time's almost up anyway, but I think you'll want this if you haven't seen it. On Sunday after the game, I was sort of fixated on how easy it was coming for James Cook, like yards down the field before being touched. The Bills are third in the league through 2 weeks, yards before contact. Jacob Gibbs put the chart out, and he removed 20-yard gains, so it doesn't, you know, slant this unnecessarily. 1.64 yards before contact. Two other teams are interesting here. One is that number one is the Bears, who look kind of bad, but they're getting push at the line of scrimmage, but Swift, I guess, isn't doing anything with it. And 31st out of 32, one of three teams with a negative yards before contact, Baltimore.
Wow.
I have not gone back and watched the Browns-Ravens game at all. I wanted to do that this week. I just haven't had an opportunity. I have no idea what the Browns did to stop Derrick Henry, but he did nothing in that game statistically.
Yeah, and if you take out 20-yard runs, there's a few in the Baltimore game you'd take out. The Bills game, I mean. So maybe if you made that 35 yards or something, yeah. Baltimore wouldn't rank 31st in the league. Okay. Yeah, Henry had a nothing day. Thank you, Sal. We'll see you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, guys.
All right. Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. His appearances are brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet?
Lines are open, 803-0550. We had an interesting run of calls last hour. Yeah, I wish the Dolphins were better. This is boring, was kind of the theme. And the game hasn't even happened yet. What's Friday going to sound like if it's 33-8? What's Friday sound like if Miami wins 33-8?
Oh, my God.
Mike Schoep, here's to no game ending 33-8 tomorrow. Here's to that. Let's say that. Back, hopefully, with your calls when we return after sports. Paul Hamilton joins us at 6. Talk a little Sabres on their first day of training camp. This is WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer.
When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, they got a good quarterback, and they do things the right way over there. Like, being in that building, they do things the right way. They got a system of how they run things and how they do things, and everybody just follows them. I mean, yeah, he's an MVP. That's what I remember. Mm-hmm. So, he's the best quarterback in the league, the MVP. He can do it all. He can run, throw, it doesn't matter.
Didn't the same thing happen yesterday where this is the WL? This is from Monday. Right. WL.
The WL.
I'm guilty of a second WL for this week.
I didn't even hear who that was speaking this time.
It was Rasul Douglas. Yep. Sal just talked about what he said. That was what he said.
Just running my mouth in here.
But we're in here commiserating over fantasy again. Right. Same topic as the last WL for wasn't listening. I'm the slappy, I think. But you're going to out-slappy me if I bring this up to you, which I'm already doing in Paul's league. I'm so reticent to make moves in his league because it's the only league I'm in where there's like a tight limit.
Yeah.
And so I feel like, sometimes I've drafted two kickers because of bye weeks. I've just tried different strategies to not get to a point where I can't make any more moves and it's the playoffs.
And I have you make this point all the time, and I don't know that I ever say it, but in my head, prior to last year, I would always think like, it's all right. There's like eight moves. That's plenty of moves. I'm not going to run out. I've run out. Last year we were good, but we couldn't find any. I couldn't sign any more guys. We were just tapped out.
That math makes sense to me. I've become the fish in this league over the last 3 or 4 years. I think that math makes sense to me. You get eight moves for the year. Guys get hurt. They're not always on IR. You can put one guy on IR, but not two, I think. Still, like, if you have somebody that's sort of week to week, maybe comes back, they don't go to IR, that clogs a spot. You get eight moves for the season, bye weeks, right? Super flex, so you have two quarterbacks. Right now, I've got May and Daniels. Browning went, Wentz went. I mean, I don't know if Daniels is going to play. I think he's not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get eight moves for the year. Am I going to use my first move on Marcus Mariota just to have a second quarterback? Like, right. Maybe. Right. But the math works because it's only 10 teams and six make it. So I'm not going to get jammed before the late weeks because 60% of the league is in the playoffs, right?
Right.
That sort of makes intuitive sense. I just haven't made the playoffs. Make the playoffs anymore.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like,
we are perennially very good in that league, but we're off to an 0-2 start, and I just don't even what we were saying when we weren't listening to Rasul Douglas talking was, like, I already feel like I've checked out. Like, I haven't looked at it one time this week since I saw the score late Sunday. We were losing by 50, and we had a kicker still to go or something. The Tampa guy who doinked one off, whatever. Like, we're dead. And I just have not opened the app since. So I don't know. We get Jalen Hurts putting up 12 points. Like, guys that are supposed to be good scoring in this, Brian Thomas Jr., Marvin Harrison Jr., all these juniors that put up 4 points, eight
Fannin
points.
Juniors.
Like, what is that? Yeah, Fannin Jr. We did.
No, Bannon Jr. Oh, Fannin.
Bannon Jr.
Fannin Jr. is another one.
Yeah, we signed him. I've got all the juniors. Maybe that's my problem.
Too many juniors.
I need some seniors.
You need Kyle Pitts Sr. instead of Harold Fannin Jr.?
I don't know.
Aaron Jones Sr. He's on IR. You don't want Aaron Jones. Yeah, it's still early, but it gets late early.
Yeah.
When you have a format like that. I do like that. I lost by 50 points, too. I did get a fun trade offer in another league, though.
Oh, yeah?
Dynasty. Ready?
By fun, you mean worth considering?
I snap called it.
Okay. All right.
Maybe you'll tell me that I shouldn't have. My team is rebuilding. This guy's is really good. He offered me a second-round pick next year and the Minnesota Vikings kicker for Aubrey.
I think you got to do that, right?
Immediately.
Yeah.
It took me 5 seconds.
A second-round pick for a kicker?
I looked
and
to make sure.
And a replacement kicker? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, who even cares? I'll just pick up a kicker. I'm bad.
I might have made that trade without the kicker.
That's what I'm saying, too.
Right, yeah. Second-round pick.
Easily.
Yeah.
But the guy didn't need the kicker. Keeps it so like he's not in violation.
Yeah,
too many players. But is Aubrey – it's kind of a good fantasy question. It's still kickers, though. Is like he's somebody – is he different?
He might be different. It's going to be wild when like they give him a contract that's like – I don't even know. Like Jones was – Jerry Jones, I saw, was – being asked about that this week because, you know, they just went through this with Parsons and ended up trading him away. They're going to set some new benchmark for a kicker contract. A team that just traded away Micah Parsons with a 30-some-year-old quarterback trying in a window where you're trying to win, right? You go ahead, George Pickens, your receiving core, you're trading away Micah Parsons, but you're gonna pay your kicker $10 million a year or something.
Reset the market.
Yeah, you're going to reset the kicker market. He might be worth it. I mean, he hits everything, and he's got a monster leg.
Still, though, it's kickers. Like, what are the odds that he'll be a top three kicker most weeks? Not great. They have to be stopped at the 50 with 2 seconds left, and so he can kick his 67-yard field goals. You know, like, the circumstances have to be right. And if you like their offense, they'll score a lot, but maybe they'll score touchdowns too. So I wouldn't want to bet on a kicker, but it's funny. Interesting the discourse now on kickoffs. What do you think of how the kickoffs are going out there? You have to think they think it's working. They're doubling or more the percentage of kickoffs that are run back. And we had one conversation in the summer that I saw come up on Twitter today. A former kicker was espousing this. I remember saying, remember talking about this? Like, was it after a preseason game maybe? What kickers really should, a caller brought it up too at one point. What kickers really should be doing is driving it into that landing zone. You get a bounce. That's how Seattle's touchdown, touchdown was scored in Pittsburgh. The Pittsburgh guy didn't know that he had to touch the ball or pick up the ball.
Every time we talked about this subject, I said, I would want my kicker practicing that all summer. Like that kick, like almost like a dodgeball kick. Like I'm going to blast it at you. And I got to get to the landing zone because that's a big mess. It's a pretty severe penalty if I don't do that. But if I get it there, low, make it hard to handle. You fiddle with it. Maybe it gets to the end zone and that's 20 at the 20 yard line instead of the 35. Like that totally works.
What is the penalty if you kick it short?
I think it's at the 40. I think 40? It's the same as the out of bounds. I think
there's some more good math. That's a third of the difference between the 20 and the 35. So I might as well try for that. I don't have to – I like the dodgeball comp. I don't have to hit the guy. I want to land it in front of him. I want to land it 5 yards in front of the return man or more, but whatever – like the landing zone is the 20. Where is he standing? The 5?
I think so, yeah.
I want to land it on a line, you know, sort of a tumbly kickoff, hard as I can – and landed it like the 12.
And then let him try to field it.
Let him try to short hop.
Maybe he misjudges it because it's a football. Like it bounces weird.
How would you play it? You played a lot of football. If you're the return man, anybody who wants this, if you're the return man at the 5 and that kickoff is coming, what do you do with it? I back up. I don't want to attack that kick. Think of playing shortstop or something.
You might rather take... I wonder how they're what they're being told to do. Like, if you don't trust it, obviously you want to cleanly field it. Whatever it's been doing, right? Whatever the ball, however it's bouncing, however effective. The idea is, I got you back here. Your job is to field that ball cleanly, right? So that's objective one. But if that sort of kick is coming, I wonder if coaches would tell a guy like, you know, just get out of the way. We'll take it at the 20. Because if you mishandle it, you're going to get tackled at the, you know, where you are, or you might turn it over or whatever. Like, you could just be in real trouble there. But you got to remember to go into the end zone and fall on the ball, though.
Still.
But still.
That's only the 20.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think I would want my guy to try to field the ball. But there's going to be risk there if it's bouncing and, nope, and on a line.
That's right. Nobody's on top of you. So you don't have to worry about an immediate risk of just getting, like, on a punt. You feel about field a bouncing punt and mishandle it, you can get popped, and that's the end of that.
Right.
But on a kickoff, they still have to run however many yards it is.
Right, you've got time to mitigate more. That. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you should have time to collect yourself and get going.
Yeah, even
but
if
you're
you
still in,
mishandle it. Right.
You're still low percentage to get to even the 30, mm-hmm, I think, on a play like that. That's the kick. We've seen them already. Kind of everybody has figured out, just, you know, drop one in the bucket in the corner.
Prater has kicked almost every kickoff into a corner at about the 3-yard line. They're getting fielded.
This is what Belichick's teams always wanted to do when he was in New England. Is that that's maybe this is what everybody wanted to do, but you'd watch games after games where guys would just blast it through the end zone because it's easy, and the starting yard line might be the 25 in those days, maybe, mm-hmm, or even the 20. But he would want to put the pressure on the return team, put the ball in the corner, Gostkowski, right there. Catch it at your 2, and then let's see what happens in the corner. That's what's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
I think the other way is better. I just make it sound easy. I don't mean to make it sound easy that you could just execute this line drive kickoff, but these guys are pretty good. Aubrey, his field goals, he's kicking 65-yard field goals. They don't get that high. I mean, he should be – they all should be able to do it.
Sure.
That's what coaches wanted. And maybe you know of a certain return man that you're playing against who's a little bit shaky and, you know, put the pressure on him. Maybe when you're behind. I think most of the time you're just trying to avoid the run back, the big run back.
Right.
And you'll take the 28. You'll just take sort of a conservative feel. You don't need the 20, but you don't want the 40. So pin him back there.
If I make you field it, you got to return it. Then, you know, there's always a chance you're going to take a penalty. You see plenty of that. So that's going to help me, too, if I'm the kicking team, right? I wonder, with all this initiative on, like, more kickoffs, this might be something that somebody probably will track it. I wonder if flags, if officials will throw fewer flags for fouls on kick returns than they have year over year. Because they're trying to enhance the game by bringing this play back. And, you know, that is something that undoes the fun of those plays. I mean, you're almost any play now, you're watching for some flag graphic on the screen to show up, especially the kick returns. Before they even had a graphic that showed it, you'd be waiting for the announcer to say, no flags, as the guy's running the last 15 yards of a long return.
When
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I should start listening for it. I'm not exactly doing this, but I feel like I would notice it when I heard it automatically. When have you last heard an announcer point out how many flags there have been in a game? Or like how one team has had, they're killing themselves with penalties. I'm sure it's happened, but I don't think accuracy is the number one priority. I think pace of play is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's to your point right there about kickoffs. So they're going to want to call those as tight if the whole mandate is to bring the kickoff return back? No.
Right.
Because then they'll ruin the kickoff return
right.
excitement that they're enjoying right now. You can't call all that. Just like it's offensive holding now.
I'm really curious to see. I mean, it's early in the year, so we get like halfway in, and we got like a reasonable sample size. Are those fouls some percentage down from year over year? I'm going to be curious to find that information.
I thought this with Al Michaels last Thursday night in Green Bay. There was a measurement in that game. I've mentioned this before, so sorry, but they just quickly moved forward. You know, the line judge is pointing one of those really close. Would have been hard to sort of know that naked eye, but they just shooed the Hawkeye. Like, let's just go.
Right.
Pace of play is number one. Accuracy is not. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. This is WGR.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.